Welcome to the program for Friday, December 7th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour. And today, my experts, counting down the three most important federal news stories of the week as they have chosen them, are Jim Williams of Dayon. It's great to see you. Thank you very much for being here today.
Hi, Francis. Pleasure to be here with you again.
And John Desenberg of the Performance Institute. It is good to see you.
Happy holidays.
Thank you, and same to you. Are you crying over the deal to sign Dan Heron of the Nationals?
I think Rizzo is, once again, way out ahead of the rest of the league.
And, Jim, you have done something to kind of, quite honestly, knock yourself down a couple of pegs. I understand that you were drooling over my colleague Beth Reardon's Mets encyclopedia before the program began. So
I was just being kind.
Okay.
I'm a Nats fan, and you know, one of the things I was going to say, John, it's been a great week for Washington sports. The Wizards beat Miami Heat, Redskins beat the Giants, and the Nats get Dan Heron. A great week.
It is a great week. It is great to see you both, and I am glad you're here for the Federal News Countdown. We start like we always do with
number three.
John Desenberg, your third most important federal news story of the week is from the New York Times. The headline is Applying Evidence to Social Programs. And when I saw this, I thought, this is right up John's alley. I'm not surprised it's on your list. What did you see in this that you either liked or didn't like?
Well, you know, let's just talk about the concept here and what John Barron, who, by the way, works very closely with OMB in the White House and the State Department. And so this is someone to pay attention to. This isn't just a random columnist. But what he's really getting at here is, for all of the money we've been spending over the last 40 years on social programs, the evidence is very sad. We have not made a lot of progress. We are often not headed in the right direction, and we are not sure what's working and what's not working. And, you know, you can say what you want about how much money we're spending in Washington, but I think at a minimum people felt like, well, we must be making some progress on these issues. Let me tell you a quick story. I was with Shelley Metzenbaum this week and the OMB staff talking about this, and she introduced me to someone from the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And BIA has moved to a more evidence-based model, and OMB is holding them up as an example of how to do this right. And let me just tell you what happens here. Instead of distributing money equally to all Indian nations and to every reservation, they are focusing now on fixing problems in the worst areas. So they're directing most of their funding to four different Indian nations. And the point of this is, we've got to get out of the habit of just spreading the money around evenly, spending just a little bit more or a little bit less everywhere. That is just completely ineffective and I think infuriating. No business would run this way. The return on the investment is very low, and we've got to apply evidence to our problems and start to understand what's effective, especially now when dollars are increasingly rare. So this is just hugely important.
What I found encouraging about this piece was something that you don't normally see when somebody starts with the idea that we're not making progress with social programs. The corollary to that usually is, so we should get rid of them. The corollary here is exactly what you're saying. Let's develop a metric, figure out if they really do work. If they don't, figure out what does work, or then the possibility exists to make something go away.
Not every state, not every county needs the same amount of money. I mean, this is no way to run a government. We've got to be more scientific and more evidence-based.
All right, John Desenberg's third most important federal news story of the week from the New York Times. The headline, Applying Evidence to Social Programs. We've got them all posted now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Jim Williams, your number three story is from my old stomping grounds, as a matter of fact, listed in the Harrisburg Patriot News. And the headline is very encouraging. The world isn't going to end this month, NASA says. Now, I know there are some people, I hope a few, very few people, that believe the world is supposed to end between now and Christmas, but NASA doesn't seem to think so.
Well, Francis, I do think this is good news, and it's great to be here with a former GSAer, John, like myself. And his story was, there's evidence we're not headed in the right direction. And this is the other thing. NASA has evidence that we're not headed in that direction, which is there is no evidence that some weird planet named Nibiru is headed to crash into us. And December 21st is the winter solstice. It happens to be my mother's 93rd birthday.
Oh, congratulations to her.
And when I told her that the world was going to end on her birthday, she's 93, she said, that's okay with me.
The idea that NASA is on this, I'm sure there's somebody out there who's going to say, why are they paying attention to something silly like this? But, I mean, I would think they have the infrastructure in place to pay attention to this stuff anyway.
Well, I think it's unfortunate that they actually get real inquiries and they have to actually tell people, you know, don't do this.
Yeah.
You know, you can continue to buy NAT season tickets next year.
And the learners are happy to hear that, too, I'm
yes.
sure. The fact that there are folks like that are kind of asking these questions, it makes me think of some of the wacky inquiries that I've heard over the years from people in government that they get from citizens. I should do a whole show on that, just
right.
having people tell their crazy stories from that they've gotten from the general public.
Well, you know, there's a crazy story. I don't know if you've ever looked at how Santa Claus is tracked by NORAD.
Uh-huh.
If you know the story of how that happened, Sears put an advertisement in the paper and put down the wrong phone number. And a kid called NORAD. A guy answered the phone, played along, said, oh, yeah, we'll track Santa. And it became something that turned into every year people volunteer for this. As you can see, they have computer models that track Santa. And it all started by some wrong phone call.
Just a random thing. Pretty amazing stuff. Jim Williams, third most important federal news story of the week from the Harrisburg Patriot News. The world isn't going to end this month, according to NASA. That's good news for us, mainly because I have a whole bunch of federal news countdowns planned between now and the end of the year. And I would hate to think that all of that work would be for no reason. All the stories posted from this week's countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The second most important federal news story of the week from Jim Williams and from John Desenberg. When the countdown continues in a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Now that I've moved to Washington, I need a new primary care doctor.
Got it handled.
And a gynecologist with appointment time.
Got it.
And a dermatologist who's taking new patients.
Got it.
And a safe pharmacy? One that doesn't make me nervous when I have to pick up prescriptions late after work?
Got it handled.
Okay, how exactly do you have it handled? It's my first week in Washington, and you have an entire integrated care team for me?
Yep. You just need to enroll in Kaiser Permanente. They have integrated medical teams, some of the best care sites, 24/7 availability for urgent care. They have convenient online tools and a mobile app. And now, J.D. Power and Associates rank them highest in member satisfaction among commercial health plans in the Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. region 4 years in a row.
I can get all that just by joining Kaiser Permanente?
You got it.
When it comes to care teams, Kaiser Permanente is clearly the right choice.
For J.D. Power and Associates award information, go to jdpower.com. Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Looking for ways to help your agency help the environment? GSA has two free online resources that promote sustainability. With GSA's newly updated carbon footprint tool, you can compile your agency's annual greenhouse gas inventory and track progress toward meeting your reduction goals. And with GSA's Sustainable Facilities Tool and Green Products Compilation Module, you can help your agency make sustainable purchasing decisions. To learn more, join the conversation today at interact.gsa.gov/sustainability.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Honey, it's time to have that discussion with your daughter.
What discussion?
Really?
Hey, guys.
Honey,
what's up with you two? Dad, have you seen all the new cars with HD radio technology? It's amazing.
HD radio technology?
Go to HDradio.com. There's like extra channels, no subscription, Fords, Chevrolets, Toyotas, Mercedes, and Dad, BMW. Gotta run. Bye.
See, that wasn't so hard.
HD radio, now available from 28 different automobile brands and more than 150 vehicles. Go to HDradio.com for more.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. few, the proud, the Marines.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. Find out what the Air Force has in common with Michelin and Fodor's. We'll talk with the man behind the cultural guidebooks the military publishes to help service members sent around the world. Plus, change is brewing in the world of classified documents. We'll hear about the latest thinking for better ways to declassify them. Those stories and more Monday morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest Federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This week's Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by John Desenberg and by Jim Williams. And we are up to
number two.
The second most important federal news story of the week from Jim Williams is from Federal Computer Week. It's Matt Weigelt's story headlined, OMB touts contract reductions, amplifies strategic sourcing push. And it's got a nice big picture of Joe Jordan, who I had the pleasure of talking to right after he took over at OFPP and then again just a couple of months ago. The idea of strategic sourcing has a lot of people happy and a lot of people not so happy. Jim, what's your take on it?
Well, I think it's something that's been very much needed, and this was under me when I was at GSA, and really had Mary Davey was pushing hard. She took innovative leadership over the program, and now I think it's really starting to happen. When you see the memo behind this from Jeff Zients, the memorandum 13-2, which is pushing strategic sourcing not only across the government but within the departments. And with all the potential budget cuts that are coming, agencies are going to have to collaborate in what we used to call the horizontal government. How do you really come together for those common requirements and start to leverage that workforce in a horizontal way? So I think this is very good news. And it puts a burden on all of the agencies to step up to the plate on this one, and I think it's a great move.
See, when you add together what you're talking about you and Mary working on this for a long time, which you and I've talked about before, and the amount of savings, Joe Jordan saying $20 billion decrease in contracting, biggest single-year dollar decrease in recent history, if not ever, what I take away from that is, As you kind of alluded to, the agencies need to step up to the plate, and the implication there in my mind, not from you just, but from the information, is that they haven't been now, that there's been some kind of a holdup, unwillingness, whatever you want to call it, for them to do this.
I think there has been some resistance to doing this, where agencies want to do their own thing. And it's that old thing about control. I can't sort of outsource my function to another agency, and I found that to be a ridiculous argument. That's been done almost since the dawn of the Republic, and it's worked well, and it can work well. And so we used to talk, Mary and I, about what percentage of what could be strategically sourced was, and say it was probably much less than 5%. So there's a wide set of opportunities out there to really take this forward and really help the government with its mission. And also, I believe, when Mary led this and did it for office supplies with some other people, Joe Ju at GSA, we actually increased the amount of money that went to small business from where it was before.
So the idea of the change management here is the sticking point, John, it sounds like. What do you do when somebody comes to you and says, well, whatever the list of excuses are?
Well, you know, I think that one of the keys, and of course, predictably from my perspective, one of the keys to all this is sharing data, common standards, interoperable standards. You know, you talk to people at the White House in the performance area, and they'll see one of the big problems with the high priority performance goals is agencies can't share information. Agencies can't share data, even agencies that are working on similar problems. And so from my perspective, not even from a contracting perspective, but from a performance perspective, this is a step forward because it means you and I are using similar systems, which means we can start sharing information, which means we can put the weight of both of our organizations together and solve common problems. This goes beyond contracting. I think this is step number one in breaking down some of these stovepipes and moving towards shared outcomes.
Is it significant, Jim, do you think, to have one particular person at every agency who's responsible for strategic sourcing?
Well, I think that's helpful to have one person accountable to really lead the effort, because typically these do cross the entire agency or department. I think John's exactly right. What's very related to this is shared services. And how do you look at how much time does it take or how much money does it cost to process a personnel action? That should be standard. And it should be that agencies should be allowed to leverage each other, just as they did years ago when the National Finance Center was created. So you didn't have every agency processing their own payroll. And now you have good measurements, and you can see that agencies have saved a ton of money and service has improved by doing this. So I think this is the right mindset to start acting as one government, not 24 different agencies.
One of the things that I've seen a lot, I've heard from a lot of folks, John, especially folks in your area of expertise in performance management, is that the budget situation, the crunch, will make agencies do a lot of things that otherwise they might not have. Jim, you're agreeing with that too?
Absolutely.
I wanted to ask you, John, if you see that happening, if you see agencies saying, maybe grudgingly, they're doing things, but at least they're doing them that they wouldn't have otherwise.
That's right. It's going to take more than budget cuts, though. I think what's essential is that we see how we both interrelate in the same picture. You know, it's not just HHS working on veterans homelessness. It's VA and HHS. And by the way, DOD needs to do it, too. So what this requires, I think, especially, is to step back, kind of get out of your own little silo and to see where you fit in the bigger picture. And, you know, we're working with agencies everywhere. It's really about backing away from your part of the problem and seeing the big problem. But you know, an example on this, Jim, that you may have seen is with electronic records, with a VA and DOD, and how difficult that was. And you ask yourself, why would that be so difficult? It's because they use different systems with different data.
Right.
As soon as
and I would just say I give credit to Jeff Zients here. When we were at a tipping point about whether to go forward with strategic sourcing, and I was going to stop investing in it, and I turned to Jeff and actually to Scott Gould, the Deputy Secretary of VA, and said, I need your help. I will tell you, both of them jumped on and said, this is the right thing to do. And it was their leadership that carried it to this day. And you can see Jeff is taking it further.
How important is that support? And I guess in some ways it's cover where somebody, it takes away an excuse. It takes away another objection potentially.
I don't think it's just support and cover. I think if you didn't have that leadership, it probably wouldn't happen. How many agencies on their own say, VA and DOD, let's go talk about electronic health records or electronic records? I think there was a mandate to do that, and I think that people need the push from the top. But then you need the leaders to actually make that mandate happen.
One of the things that I liked about this, too, is we seldom see in this day and age the administration and Congress kind of moving in sync. Congressman Issa, the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, has been working on IT acquisition reform. He comes out when he looks at this memo and says, this has a lot of the same stuff my legislation has. So we see some synchronicity there that we don't see a lot in this day and age.
You know, Congressman Issa is an interesting person, but one of the things, he's very pragmatic on this stuff, and he's very much a businessman, and that's, you see him working with Congressman Connolly on things, and you're like, how did that happen? But he's very pragmatic. You know, one thing, though, I think we do have to shine a light on, which is even inside agencies, there is still not shared services, which I find shocking, absolutely shocking. IT governance inside one agency, one department, they still don't even have that situation straight, which is one of the reasons they're trying to strengthen CIOs. Mm. But, you know, this is great shared services between departments, but let's get the individual departments in order as well.
Is that what one of the things that you think that ISA wants to get at with the codification of Clinger-Cohen and how you really enforce or I guess enforce is the best word?
I do. I think John is right. I think getting the CIOs more control over the IT budget is essential because, frankly, they have accountability. And when I was at GSA and Casey Coleman said, I need to have more authority over all these programs, I agreed with everything she said. And actually, when OMB came together about this, there was only one piece I did not agree with. I think the CIOs do need more control. I do think the CIOs are not entities unto themselves, though. They're there as, like I was always, as something to support a mission. I do think one part of this is wrongheaded. And this idea that at a cabinet-level agency, you have one CIO and one in name and title only. If I were CIO of DOD or Homeland Security, all those components that had sub-CIOs, I wouldn't care if they were called CIOs because then I'd know where to find them. But if they had other names, other titles, and what does it cost you to give somebody the title of CIO in this town? It doesn't cost you anything. But if all of a sudden every department or every component of DHS had a different title for what really was a CIO, you'd lose the accountability chain. So I think that's a bad idea.
All right, we're going to talk more about that later on in the program. I'm not going to give away the end of the show, but we have more on that coming up on the Federal News Countdown. Jim Williams' second most important federal news story of the week is from Federal Computer Week. The headline is OMB touts contract reductions, amplifies strategic sourcing push, and it's linked up now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The number two federal news story of the week is chosen by John Desenberg, is next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge.
When the burning discomfort of heartburn strikes, antacids can help put out the flame. But like any medication, there can be side effects. According to Mayo Clinic Dr. Yvonne Romero, there are three major classes of antacids. There's the magnesium hydroxide products.
And those medicines cause diarrhea. There are calcium carbonate products. Those constipate.
Frequent long-term use could also lead to calcium building up in the kidneys and causing damage. Finally, there are the aluminum products.
And those things have been associated with Alzheimer's disease.
If you're using antacids, Dr. Romero says you'll also want to pay attention to the labeling.
If your bowel habits are odd, you want to read the active ingredient in your antacid.
That's because the formulations can and do change. For more information, talk to your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Vivian Williams.
The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to transform how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show When Crowd Meets Cloud, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
with the what I call the legacy method, you're only going to be able to get access to the expertise of the winning contractor. Well, as it turns out, you know, two other contractors might have had better expertise available, but due to cost reasons or their management processes or whatever, they didn't have the winning bid. With the crowd, you have the potential to tap into any and all resources who want to subscribe to that particular job. But you still have to manage that situation, but you use the cloud to do that.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware. That's federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
How does federal budgetary uncertainty impact government agencies and other sectors? What is the effect on the efficiency and effectiveness of government? Are we facing a fiscal cliff or slope? Join host Michael Keegan and Professor Phil Joyce, author of a new IBM Center report, The Costs of Budget Uncertainty, analyzing the impact of late appropriations, as they explore these questions and more, next week on a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors.
After The Biggest Loser. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. To most of us, The Biggest Loser is a TV show. To Kevin Hall, it's also a research project. The scientist at the National Institutes of Health saw the weight loss program as a way to see what happens when really big people diet and exercise a huge amount to lose a lot of weight. The TV program doesn't tell us what happens after the show ends, so Hall used a computer model to project it. He says the biggest losers wouldn't need a monster regimen to keep the weight under control.
They would have had to have about a 20% calorie cut from where they started with about 20 minutes a day of vigorous exercise.
And he says this is doable for a lot of people, including those not on the show. The study is in the journal Obesity. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Really? One website to find all government and military events happening in our area?
It's about time. Why didn't I think of that?
I know. With GovEvents.com, it's so easy to find government and military-related events happening near me and around the world. I can search by keyword, date, location, live events versus webcasts, and so much more. And best of all, it's completely free.
Seriously? I can't believe I haven't heard of this site before. What is it again?
It's GovEvents.com, the best place to find government events that matter matter to you near you.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Jim Williams and John Desenberg. The second most important federal news story of the week as selected by John Desenberg from the Washington Post. The headline is DIA sending hundreds more spies overseas. And you can understand why when you read this story. There are threats coming to us from all over the place, and we need to gather intelligence on those threats. What was it about this story in particular that jumped out at you, John?
You know, there's something I teach in the classes that I teach, and it's called mission creep. Mission creep or mission blur. And that happens when you start to drift away from why you were created and extend into other people's areas. And I'm not saying that DIA doesn't need to send hundreds more spies overseas. I just think we need to take a hard look at the intelligence community as a whole. And what are they morphing into? What roles are they taking on? We have the CIA launching missiles and acting like the Department of Defense. We have the Department of Defense sending spies abroad and acting like the CIA. We have an Office of the Director of National Intelligence that has many unresolved issues. You know, Francis, you remember 4 or 5 years ago, we heard, you know, this is a very kind of unusual organization. They get some of their money from the Defense Department. They get some of their money from civilian funding. They don't really have full control over the agencies that are under them. It's kind of a federation of 16 different entities. And that discussion has largely disappeared, but the issues and the problems have not. You know, ODNI still has people running on different IT systems. They're still trying to get that together all these years later. They still don't have one central place to have clearance processes through. And I'm just concerned that we don't talk about this area enough. I think there's naturally a little fear about talking about it. No one wants to be unpatriotic and talk about the intelligence community. I think there's a feeling you shouldn't talk about it. But the fact is, these are billions and billions of dollars. We're not sure where they're going. We're seeing agencies move in strange directions. And I'm concerned. I think we do need to start talking about this.
Do you worry when you see the different agencies doing similar things to what other agencies are doing, Jim?
I do worry a little bit, as John said, about mission creep. On the other hand, I came from DHS. I believe it's a dangerous world. I think having intelligence is a front line of defense. I'd rather learn about something so I can prevent it. And I think there's, you know, if you look at what DIA might be trying to do is leverage its weaponry information and its expertise to help the CIA. And I hope it's something where even as DIA, if it grows, it never loses close contact with the CIA, because we don't want another 9/11 where two groups weren't talking to each other.
And that's right at the core of what is the thing that I'm thinking about here, which is it's I care less about who's collecting what than I do about who's able to see what and who's able to know what. And that's where, given the track record that we've seen in government throughout government's history, that's where I guess I'm a little more skeptical.
Well, I'm with you. I do believe there's a lot of danger spots in the world, and there's a lot of sources of intelligence. You know, this is human intelligence, but along with all of the other types, we've got to be able to, whoever collects that information, it's got to be brought together, it's got to be analyzed, it's got to be fused, and it's got to be done well. We can't afford, as a nation, any more intelligence failures.
Is it your sense that information sharing is getting better, either one of you, or are we kind of stuck in a rut?
No, I think it is getting a little better from what I've seen and heard during my work experience, that they are trying to move in that direction. But it is a very long journey to get there. And, you know, one of the things that you have to think about is, again, on the IT side, how do you connect people? You know, for a long time, they were trying something called Intellipedia, which was the Wikipedia for the intelligence community, and we were supposed to all be able to add information, but that really hasn't worked as well well as they wanted it to. So sharing, collecting, you know, one of the things, and maybe this doesn't matter anymore, but traditionally they did not want military leadership at the CIA, and they stayed away from that. And then in recent years, we started getting General Hayden, and then we got General Petraeus, and so there has become kind of a military angle to the CIA, and does it belong as part of the Defense Department? Are we okay with that? You know, I think these are unresolved issues.
I would say, Francis, you asked about, you know, is the right kind of sharing going on? Gordon England, the former Deputy Homeland Security Secretary, said, our biggest vulnerability is a poor memory. And I think the more we get away from something that created a sense of urgency, maybe people might get a little bit more complacent in how they talk to each other. And I remember being at DHS, and frankly, there was one part of the organization that just couldn't stand the FBI, and the feeling was very mutual. We were ordered to share, and even after that order, I created the line, a direct order from the president is one of several options to consider, that even when told to share, there are people reluctant to do it. So I think there needs to be constant vigilance to make sure that sharing takes place.
And we're back to that change management thing that we talked about a little bit ago.
And the mantra that they are really trying to pound into people's brains in the intelligence community is you should share. Mm. Unfortunately, change management-wise, this is a huge cultural change from the past where you were supposed to hold things very tightly. And you were only allowed to share something if the other person asked for it and the other person had the rights to see it and you could quiz them on why they really needed to see it. So they are really trying to change the essence of what it means to be an intelligence. Agent.
And I would just say what John is saying, you know, part of that behind this is the IT, the ability to segment the information. And as everybody's moving into a mobile workforce, including the intelligence agencies, how do you really make sure that people have the right authentication and the right need to access that information? And let's not have another WikiLeaks. Let's make sure we share, but make sure that we know who's accessing that information and make sure we know it's that individual and not somebody who's, frankly, stolen somebody's identity.
The second most important federal news story of the week, as selected by John Desenberg for this week's Federal News Countdown, is from the Washington Post. DIA sending hundreds more spies overseas. That and all of our stories in the countdown are linked up now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When we come back, the most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by Jim Williams and John Desenberg. It's the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
We have a big
reward
just for federal employees, a wellness incentive worth up to $50. And that's just one of the extra benefits at no extra cost with the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Service Benefit Plan. You also get everything from free annual physicals to generic drug incentives. To learn about our other
rewards
and about the wellness incentive, visit extras.fepblue.org or call 1-800-411-BLUE.
BYOD. The employee owns the devices, they bring them into work, and then they hook up to the local network. And so this whole movement toward portable devices is actually transforming all of IT. And there are a lot of opportunities there. All the security related to BYOD, bring your own device, a lot of security issues, security policy relating there. Application development for all of these items, it's a very, very big area.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Who are the top leaders in the federal government? Federal News Radio wants to know who has inspired you and what qualities do you think make a great leader? Nominate someone today. A top leader can be someone who knows how to motivate a team to success or a mentor to younger coworkers. A top leader can be anyone. You tell us. Nominations will be accepted through January 8th, and finalists will be announced as part of a Federal News Radio special report in February. Find the nomination form at federalnewsradio.com. Search Top Leaders.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Republican Senator Bob Corker from Tennessee.
Hopefully part of what we'll see happen with the Budget Control Act, where we're cutting $1 trillion over the next decade, is going to be tremendous compression on what we're doing through government contracting.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Jim Williams and by John Desenberg. And we are up to
number one.
The most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Jim Williams, is from the LA Times, and the headline is "A Primer: Fiscal Cliff Deal at a Standstill as Deadline Looms." And yes, we talked about this before we went on the air, Jim. The last time you were here was to do the Countdown show was several months ago. And you were on with Dan Chenick, our friend at the IBM Center for the Business of Government. And the top story at the time, you both chose it, had to do with the fiscal cliff. Here we are months later, closer to the deadline, but no closer to a solution.
Well, I agree. We're right at that cliff. And last time, the second article I chose, I think, was that Congress was the most ineffective Congress since like 1947 or something in terms of bills being passed. And I think this is both the legislative and executive branch, and I mean, people are counting on them to do their jobs. Everybody has said, more not everyone, but most people, the fiscal cliff is devastating to this country. We shouldn't go through that. It's not the smart way to run a country. And as I look at it, I don't think they're that far apart, but it becomes so much of a political discussion where they draw the lines in the sand. And I think, unfortunately, both sides have to give, and they have to come up with that deal.
And it, I, this time it seems to even, Jim, transcend the political to the personal. Neither side wants to be the side that looks like they gave in.
Right.
And there's a difference between giving up and giving in. And I think neither side wants to even look like they're giving something up so they don't look like the quote-unquote loser.
Well, and I think where you play that brinkmanship, where you draw the hard and fast lines in the sand, then if you actually give in, you look like you're weakened for years to come. And I think that's the wrong way to go about this. I think they should be going about this saying, what's the right thing to do for the country? And there was a good letter in the Washington Post, one of those full-page letters signed by both sides, and I thought it was good, saying what our goal should be. Our goal should be not to devastate the country with across-the-board devastating cuts, but at the same time, we've got to look at how do we lower the deficit as a percentage of the economy and start to take the debt down, you know, over time. You know, we're talking about, you know, a little bit of pain now, but also not so much pain on children and grandchildren.
I'm glad that you mentioned the debt because, John, I think the topic of the debt gets lost. The debt is $16 trillion plus at this point. We borrow 40% of the money that we spend every year from other countries or financial institutions. And the reality of it is, if you wanted to just do a real quick and dirty back-of-the-envelope deal, it's 20% spending cut across the board and 20% tax increase on everybody that's paying taxes right now. And that would get you at least to par for this year. That would close the deficit. Still wouldn't do anything to touch the debt. So there's a tall hill here to climb, and especially for to really not be making any progress on it at all.
Well, you know, and I'll throw in getting back to scientific evidence, there is a lot of data out there that shows that indecision, every day you put off a decision, adds to your problems, adds to your costs, adds to ripple effects, mostly negative. And, you know, this kick the can down the road, or we're going to make a midnight deal, all of this stuff, which is this kind of Washington way of going about their work, is wildly inefficient, builds costs in where costs really don't belong, and you know, this mindset, again, of these midnight deals is ridiculous. And I'll throw one other piece in from today's news, Senator DeMint. And the fact that people are now leaving the Senate, the prestigious, obviously, U.S. Senate, to go and work for the Heritage Foundation or an outside group because they feel like they can have more of an effect on the nation somewhere other than the Senate. You know, to people like us, that seems crazy,
yeah.
But it's true. Congress has become ineffective, so ineffective that people are voluntarily just leaving to do something else when they want to make a difference. And I think that's just shocking.
Well, and I think John mentioned something that Dan and I both did last time, is this, not only this one-time uncertainty, the continued uncertainty, and how these agencies have to go through these multiple planning sessions to deal with it. That takes a lot of distraction from the mission. It takes a lot of resources to go through this. And if they reach the deal at midnight, then a lot of that will have been done for nothing and shouldn't have been done. And, you know, when are we going to have a budget? You know, when are we going to have a postal reform bill? When are we going to have Congress doing what they were elected to do, which is to pass the laws that we need? We don't have a cybersecurity law. I mean, there's just something wrong.
The short-term horizon to get reelected has become, it was always a little bit of a problem. It has become a huge problem that is badly, badly affecting the country. And you can just go on the examples that Jim just listed. It's tragic.
I'm going to take out the tax issues because for the day-to-day operations of the federal agencies, that's not top of mind for them. But I've got four things here that are unresolved, that are huge, gigantic issues that do apply to the day-to-day operation of the federal government. Sequestration is one. That's January 2nd is the deadline as we sit here today. Beginning of February, it's FY 2014 budget requests and the progress or lack thereof that we'll see over the next 6 or 8 months. The debt limit, which Secretary Geithner says could hit as soon as the end of January, but he believes that they can stretch it out till February or March, and the continuing resolutions that expire at the end of March. That's a big stack of stuff to try to plow through the latest deadline of any of those is the continuing resolution one, at least as we sit here today at the end of March. So the next 3.5 months or so of business are very critical, huge items. And Jim, what I'm seeing, my perception is things like postal service reform and cybersecurity legislation and so on are tremendously important. But it's hard to argue that any of them are more important than these other priorities that are real heavy lifting. And it's all got to get done at some point.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, if you look at the four you just listed, Francis, sequestration, the 2014 budget, the debt limit, the continuing resolution, those are all about financial planning. And if we were a financial planner in the private sector, we'd be out of business. And it's just causing havoc all over the world. It's got to be resolved.
Somebody said, a friend of mine told me recently, if I was hired to run a company this way, I wouldn't be anymore because I would be fired. And that's really pretty much the size of it. Jim Williams' most important federal news story of the week this week from the LA Times, a primer on the fiscal cliff. And you can read it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important federal news story of the week. We'll wrap up this week's Federal News Countdown. It's selected by John Desenberg, and you'll hear it next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.